From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. A global movement is using boycotts to pressure Israel to soften its policies in the Palestinian territories. About half the states have passed laws against such boycotts. Maryland's governor issued an executive order denying state contracts to businesses that boycott Israel. The governor's order is being challenged in court by a software contractor who says it's unconstitutional. We hear from a law professor who has examined state responses, and Zainab Chaudhry, Maryland liaison for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, explains why CARE got involved in the lawsuit.
Any legislative measure that's implemented to prohibit the right of any American or any Marylander to be able to protest based on what they believe are their sincerely held beliefs is deeply problematic.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. 2 years ago, legislation was filed in the Maryland General Assembly aimed at thwarting state contracts with businesses that support a boycott of Israel. The bill was part of the effort to block BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, aimed at pressuring Israel to end its occupation of the Palestinian territories. The bill failed to pass. Months later, in October 2017, Governor Larry Hogan signed an executive order that does much the same thing. It prohibits state contracts with businesses that engage in or support a boycott of Israeli businesses. The executive order is being challenged in a lawsuit on behalf of a former Maryland state delegate, a software engineer who says it cost him the chance to bid on state contracts. Later in the show, we'll ask a law professor from the University of California, Berkeley, to decipher language used in the executive order and ask if it can stand up in court. Joining us now is civil and social rights activist Zainab Chaudhry. Chaudhry is spokeswoman and Maryland liaison for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, which is serving as counsel for the plaintiff in the lawsuit. She also serves on the advisory board of the Interfaith Action for Human Rights. Welcome to On the Record, Zainab.
Thank you for having me.
First, explain the boycott that is referred to in the executive order. What exactly is BDS?
So BDS is a movement that was founded by Palestinian activists and has now actually become internationally renowned by advocates all around the world, including many Jewish American groups who support Palestinians' right to be able to fight for their liberation in nonviolent ways, to protest the human rights violations and the international laws that the Israeli government is responsible for breaking in its interactions with the Palestinian people.
What is the civil lawsuit that's been filed against Governor Hogan and Attorney General Brian Frosch?
So in 2017, Maryland became one of 26 states across the nation that have implemented some level of anti-BDS measure in state legislature. And so this lawsuit that CARE has filed on behalf of our plaintiff, Zakab Ali, is a lawsuit that challenges the constitutionality of this executive order, especially because this executive order prioritizes the interests of a foreign nation above our constitutional rights as Americans to be able to engage in free speech.
How do you reach that conclusion?
Boycotting is it's part of the political fabric of our society in the United States. It was instrumental during the civil rights movement. It was instrumental during the Boston Tea Party. And it's been part of our country as an effective way to challenge policies and politics that are viewed as inhumane or unjust or unfair.
But in signing his executive order, Governor Hogan was quoted saying, boycotts based on religion, national origin, place of residence, or ethnicity are discriminatory. That was the governor's argument. What would you say?
While it's important to recognize that what the governor is saying is true, I think the governor doesn't understand the fact that the boycott itself that's promoted through the BDS movement is not discriminatory towards the Israeli government because they're Jewish. It's not anti-Semitic in nature. The boycott itself is intended to protest unjust policies and human rights violations against the Palestinian people. And I think that whenever we prioritize the interests of a foreign government over our own First Amendment protected free speech rights here in the United States, it sends a very dangerous message to lobbyists, to different groups and organizations, that our Constitution is an increasingly, you know, jeopardized document, that endangered document that does not carry a lot of weight, that it does, it's not enforceable. I think lawmakers have a responsibility to protect the First Amendment free speech rights of all Americans, including Marylanders, and not prioritize the interests of any foreign government above the rights that are enshrined in that document.
We requested comment about the civil lawsuit and received this statement from Cherise Churchill, who's press secretary to Governor Hogan. Quote, "We are confident that our executive order is completely consistent with the First Amendment and will be upheld in court." Close quote. What do you think?
I think that the courts will have to decide. Organizations like CARE, ACLU, Center for Constitutional Rights, and many others have very clearly said that these measures that are passed in state legislatures across the country, in 26 different state legislatures across the country, are unconstitutional. It's unfortunate that it took this action for Governor Hogan's office to respond and comment, because we had reached out initially to them a couple years ago when the executive order was first signed, to help them understand why it was problematic. But now that, you know, this is an issue that we're seeing other states also take on, it's beginning to get more traction and more attention. I think people are really beginning to realize and understand the dangers in these kind of executive orders that chill free speech and chill criticism of any foreign government.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Zainab Chowdhury, Maryland liaison for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. She was also named one of the Baltimore Sun's 25 women to watch in 2016. We're talking about the civil lawsuit filed against Governor Larry Hogan regarding his executive order that denies state contracts to businesses that support boycotts against Israel. In a recent interview with I-24 News, Josh Block, who is CEO and president of the Israel Project, likened the BDS movement to a thinly veiled anti-Semitism. He contended the boycott's goal is to ultimately, quote, strangle and destroy the state of Israel, close quote. So that's his argument in support of what he calls anti-discrimination laws that states are putting into place. What's your reaction to what he says?
It's natural for groups that promote human rights violations against Palestinians to want to oppose any attempt to undermine or challenge anti-BDS measures that are being implemented. And that wouldn't be surprising to anyone who understands the politics that are in play here. I think it's natural that there are going to be groups who are going to resist these attempts to push back against unconstitutional measures. But unfortunately, or fortunately, they have to understand that we are a nation that's governed by a set of laws. And the overarching body of laws in the United States is the U.S. Constitution. And that Constitution prohibits any group or any individual from having their free speech, First Amendment free speech rights from being infringed upon by any lawmaker or any government. And ultimately, that's the core issue here. The fact that our government, state government, would first request entities to sign a loyalty oath saying that they effectively would not boycott the state of Israel before they're eligible to apply for contracts is deeply problematic on so many different levels. And the question comes to light that why are we specifically giving one country special treatment when there are other groups who, for example, if somebody wanted to boycott the state of Saudi Arabia, our government has no such clause in place that you do not have to sign a loyalty oath to Saudi Arabia before you're eligible for contracts. And so it's an ethical issue, it's a moral issue, it's a legal issue. And I think naturally there are going to be voices that resist these attempts to counteract challenges to anti-BDS measures. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, any group that tries to justify any legislative measure that's implemented to prohibit the right of any American or any Marylander to be able to protest based on what they believe are their sincerely held beliefs, it's deeply problematic.
So what is the outcome that CARE is looking for in the lawsuit on behalf of Saqib Ali?
We're looking for justice for our client.
And what would justice be in your
justice
view?
Justice would be for him to not, or any for any entity, to not be required to sign a loyalty oath, effectively pledging loyalty to the state of Israel before they be eligible to apply for a state contract. And I think that this is something that we've seen a growing movement in state legislatures across the country where lawmakers have been approached to implement these measures on a statewide level. And it's very dangerous because it sets a precedent and it, in effect, diminishes the rights that are enshrined within our Constitution. And if we have this precedent, then the message that it sends to other groups and other organizations is, well, we made a special case for Israel, that you have to sign a loyalty oath to Israel, irrespective of what your political views are on the Middle East conflict. What's to say that another group isn't going to come up next and say, well, if we made one exception, why can't we make another? And at the end of the day, when we go in that direction, we're allowing our own prejudices take precedence over the U.S. Constitution. And at the end of the day, I think that the question is whether or not, the First Amendment free speech right that's enshrined in that Constitution deserves to be upheld or not. Two states we have seen courts rule favorably on behalf of, the plaintiffs who have been filing the lawsuit to challenge these unconstitutional measures. And I think that it shouldn't be surprising to anybody to see similar lawsuits being filed in other states as well.
Thanks for telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Zainab Chaudhry, spokeswoman and Maryland liaison for the Council on American Islamic Relations. We're talking about Governor Hogan's executive order that denies state contracts to businesses that support boycotts against Israel and the civil lawsuit challenging that order. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. After the break, we'll ask a law professor to unravel some of the language in the executive order and his take on the lawsuit. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. We're talking this morning about one aspect of a global movement called BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, aimed at pressuring Israel to change its policies in the Palestinian territories. Specifically, in Maryland, a Montgomery County businessman and former state delegate, Syed Saqib Ali, is challenging as unconstitutional the executive order Governor Larry Hogan signed in 2017. It denies state contracts to businesses that boycott Israel. We spoke earlier with Zainab Chaudhry, spokeswoman and Maryland liaison for the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, the organization that is counsel to Ali. And joining us now is David Schraub, lecturer at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. Schraub, who grew up in Bethesda, is also a senior research fellow at the California Constitution Center and a doctoral candidate in the Department of Political Science. His research and teaching focuses on constitutional and anti-discrimination law, law and religion, and energy law. Welcome to the show, David.
It's great to be here.
We learned earlier that more than 24 states have laws similar to Governor Hogan's executive order, which you have read. Is Hogan's order different in some way?
So every state has its own little spin, and the Maryland order is no different. It seems to be somewhat more narrowly drawn than many of the other state and local laws that I've read or that I've seen. with more of a focus particularly on discrimination and attempts to carve out protection for boycotts that are done that target a specific company for a specific target versus ones that sweep to say, you know, I'm not going to buy or transact with any Israeli whatsoever just because they're Israeli. But that being said, it does, you know, specifically focus just on Israel. It isn't a general anti-discrimination requirement like you see in some other states that have tried to draw them even more narrowly or tried to, you know, make sure that it's a rule that applies in all cases.
You are not involved in the civil lawsuit against the Maryland executive order, but you've read it. What is your take on it? Would it stand up to the claim of the plaintiff in court?
It's going to be very interesting to see. The law here is very much still shaking out. This is kind of a new area, and we're seeing, you know, a bunch of different litigation. Every single case is somewhat different. It was interesting to me to notice that Ali says he's only, you know, boycotting a couple of companies, not Israelis generally, which, you know, whereas the executive order says that it only applies in cases where you're boycotting on the basis of the national origin rather than objecting to, for example, something that Sabra Hummus does. And it's also interesting that he says in his complaint that he's boycotting in his personal capacity, not as a software engineer as a contractor, and that also could, you know, give the court pause about whether this executive order even genuinely applies to him.
So your reading is that it could be that Saqib Ali could have been bidding for these contracts and
just didn't try? Was something that, you know, crossed my mind when I read his complaint. It's not clear to me whether or not he couldn't actually certify that he wasn't boycotting Israel in the narrow way that it's defined in the executive order, which says that it's a boycott only if you're refusing to transact with them on the basis of their national origin, rather than a specific boycott targeted at particular companies or entities based on their specific objectionable conduct.
When we talked to Zainab Chaudhry of CARE, she described, not in a very technical way, but sort of referred to the impact of the Maryland executive order as requiring people to sign a loyalty oath to Israel before they could bid for a Maryland contract. You've spent a lot more time with the executive order than I have. Is that a fair characterization?
No, I think it's actually deeply unfair, and it's very actually concerning to hear that sort of language, loyalty oaths, loyalty pledges, which, you know, kind of harnesses a very problematic history in how Israel and the relationship of Americans to Israel is often portrayed. What the certification requirement, you know, it requires you to say that you're not engaging in certain conduct. And it's possible that that requirement is unconstitutional. I think it's a close question in this sort of cases about whether it represents viewpoint discrimination or not. And I think it's important for the courts to hash that out. I think this order in particular represents a very close call. But I think that, you know, there's something dangerous in a lot of ways about the way that these laws are being often characterized in terms that echo some very dangerous tropes regarding the American-Israeli relationship. It's not a loyalty oath, and nobody, you know, it doesn't require you to change allegiance to a new state to say that you're not going to refuse to transact with someone based on their national origin. And I think that we wouldn't say that about other forms of attempted anti-discrimination provision that require one to refrain from discriminating on basis of race, on basis of sexual orientation. I don't see why national origin is different or requires that sort of language.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with David Traub, lecturer at UC Berkeley School of Law. We're talking about anti-boycott laws and whether they can stand up in court. Federal laws about boycotting countries have been in place for decades. Can you briefly explain what those federal laws do and how state laws differ?
Yes. So the federal law that exists has been in place since the late 1970s. And what it does is it says that you can't boycott a country which the U.S. has open trade relations. So it's not just about Israel. It applies to all sorts of friendly countries. You can't boycott them if it's done at the behest of a foreign country. So you can't participate in a foreign country's imposed boycott on an American trading partner. And that was done to prevent, coercion, to prevent American companies from sort of being roped into a boycott that they really didn't want to participate in, but they felt like they had to, otherwise they lose business with another state. So if Kuwait says you can't do business with us unless you boycott Israel, the company may not really want to boycott Israel, but they're trying to protect their relationship with Kuwait, so they might feel compelled to participate. And the American law is designed to stop that. This new wave of laws that we're seeing at the state level, including in the Maryland executive order, I think would fall into this category, is very, very different. What they're trying to do is say that people who, voluntarily, who aren't coerced into boycotting Israel, it's generally what they believe and they want to do it, that the state isn't going to invest or transact with them. It's sometimes called boycotting the boycotters. And so, the states will say, we, in spending our money and deciding who we want to contract with as our own market participants, one of the rules that we're going to lay out is that you can't be a boycotter of Israel. And that raises a very different set of First Amendment questions regarding, what sort of conditions can the government place on speech when handing out contracts.
You wrote an opinion piece for the Jewish Telegraphic Agency last month titled, Anti-BDS Laws Are a Constitutional and PR Mess. Here's how to make them better. What are your main points?
The main point is that, a lot of these laws are being written more for, to kind of make a symbolic gesture rather than with real care towards the important constitutional issues that they raise and the important free speech questions that are put into place whenever you're talking about disadvantaging someone based on the expressive position that they take. Most of the laws I've seen haven't been very careful in that respect, and that's because they're more about scoring a political point, I think, than trying to craft careful legislation. If you do want to fix them, the advice I gave was that, first of all, they shouldn't be Israel-only one-off. Right, which is a problem with the Maryland executive order, is that it, I think it plausibly is attacking only national origin discrimination. But why only national origin discrimination against Israelis? Why not against the French? Why not against Tunisians? Why not against other countries with which the U.S. has friendly and open trade relations? It raises important, I think valid questions when Israel seems to be getting this sort of special protection that other nationalities don't. And then second, I think there needs to be more care taken about how it applies to individuals and sole proprietorships. In the case of Ali, on the one hand, I think you can say that, what he does in his spare time, that he doesn't buy Sabra hummus, that he doesn't buy a soda stream, it shouldn't affect his ability to work as a software engineer for the state. And I think that, a lot of these laws were designed more with larger companies in mind. That said, I think there certainly could be a valid point to be made that, in his work for the state, right, that Ali, for example, couldn't refuse to use a given software program or work with a software database just because its manufacturer was Israeli. I think that, the Maryland state government has a very valid interest in ensuring that it's in their work with the state of Maryland that contractors don't discriminate in that sense. And so I think there could be a lot more work in more narrowly tailoring these laws so that A, they aren't Israel-only one-off, and B, that they firmly distinguish between what individuals do on their own time and what they do as contractors for the state.
In the U.S. Senate, Marco Rubio of Florida introduced the bill Strengthening America's Security in the Middle East Act of 2019 as soon as Congress convened in January. Much of it addresses authorization of military aid to Israel. But the last section is called Combating BDS Act of 2019. Describe this.
Yeah, so as you said, the law, most of it is about aid to Israel or aid to Jordan or a new sanctions regime on Syria. But the last section, it's a really good example of a law that's being written primarily for the political points to be scored rather than, with a specific eye toward resolving a problem. I mean, in terms of what it actually does, it just clears a kind of a jurisdictional hurdle that some of these states might face in passing their own laws. It says that these state BDS laws, like the Maryland one, for example, won't run afoul of federal law. But it doesn't actually change the state of the law itself. It's up to the states to decide whether they want to walk through that door that Congress opened.
So, don't mean to put words in your mouth, but we need to wrap up. It sounds as if the Rubio bill, were it to pass, would not have much impact on Governor Hogan's executive order or on Syed Saqib Ali's lawsuit.
You know, it removes one potential argument against Governor Hogan's executive order. It removes the argument that this is something that the federal government should be handling rather than state government. But that really hasn't been the locus point of the dispute between Ali and the state. You know, Ali's problem with this executive order isn't that, you know, he thinks the wrong branch of government is handling it. He thinks that it's a violation of free speech. And in that sense, the Rubio law, if it passed, would have nothing to say on that.
I really appreciate you talking to us. Thanks so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
David Schwab is lecturer at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. He's also senior research fellow at the California Constitution Center and a doctoral candidate in the Department of Political Science. We've been talking about the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel and state laws that deny contracts to businesses that boycott Israel. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.